do a very quick introduction. There's only one microphone for the entire auditorium, so when we're done, we're going to move the microphone down here so that folks can speak clearly and be heard by the entire audience. I would say when you do come up to speak, when you're done, there is a sign-up sheet on the table. If you would please put your name and address information or identifying information on there if you so choose, but we do need your name for the records. Our agenda tonight is to listen, and we have one business item to do, which is an approval of minutes, and then we're going to move right into the public hearing. And so, folks, we're going to limit comments to 3 minutes. We do also have on the schools a very hard stop of 9 p.m. I don't think we'll be beyond that there, but in the event that we do, we're just going to have to stop because of the facilities limitation on that. Welcome, Ms. Johnson. You're just in time. We're going to start introductions. I'm going to pass the mic down for introductions. Again, my name is Pierce Homer. I'm chair of the Navy Hill Advisory Commission.
My name is Corey Walker. I'm Mike Shaw. I'm a lawyer, member of the commission.
Hi, I'm John Werner, managing director of Leisure Business Advisors and a past president of the Union Hill Civic Association. I live just a few blocks away from here.
I'm Mimi Sadler. I'm a small business owner and a historical architect.
Good evening. My name is Brinley Johnson. I'm the Deputy Secretary of Administration for the Commonwealth of Virginia.
And before we do get into the program, I did want to ask for just a brief moment of silence for former Senator Elliot Shule, who passed away yesterday. He was a wonderful senator. I had the pleasure of working with him in the General Assembly, obviously represented here today by his son. So a moment of silence, please. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Any comments or questions? Is there a motion?
I move the minutes be approved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any disclosures? And is there anything from our Freedom of Information officer?
Yes, we had 2 FOIA requests since our last meeting, both from the Richmond Times-Dispatch and both involving communications by members of the commission, Mike Shule and Dr. Hakeem Lucas. And as soon as that process is complete on our side, then I will document what we have provided and it will be on the website.
All right, we're going to start the public hearing process. And so, again, we've got space down here for speakers. If you could please identify yourself. We do not have a microphone up here. You've got all the power in the mic here. And let's just come out and stand up when you're done. If you would please sign here, but then pass the microphone to whoever behind you. That's what I'm
going to do. I'll sign later. I would like to say first that as a former secretary to a planning commission for a locality in this state and as a secretary to a board of zoning appeals, that limiting public comments to 3 minutes may be legally questionable. My understanding working in that capacity was that if somebody had something to say at a public hearing on a legal matter, that they had basically free rein to, within reason, make their comments or submit them. But anyway, I just had a couple things I wanted to ask the commission to consider. I haven't seen in the minutes of the commission a response to the Style Weekly article by architect Slipik about the 15 questions regarding the Navy Hill project and specifically about the Coliseum component of that. I would like to see actually answers to all of those questions submitted by the commission and put into the minutes if you would meet and do that. And I think those are all quite valid points, some of which I addressed in some earlier written comments to the commission myself. But there are several things in there. For example, why can't the current Coliseum building be rehabbed at a much lower cost than construction of a new facility? How would that be inconsistent with other development plans? And there are quite a number of other things. My basic concern with this Navy Hill project as it's put forward is, you know, it's $1.5 billion proposal as described by its proponents, and that includes an estimated cost for a 17,000 seat Coliseum at about $250 million or $600 million over the financing period. I made the effort to look in Wikipedia to see how many Coliseums there are of about that capacity in the United States, and if the commission doesn't know the answer to that, I happen to have it here. There's something like 41 that are of a capacity of 16,000 or greater that were mentioned in Wikipedia. And I think it's incumbent on either this commission or the consultants to the city council or someone to look at every darn one of those Coliseum projects to see how they're supported, what kind of return they're making. Do they actually bring in any money? I'm aware of several, just looking at newspaper articles that I'm familiar with, for example, about the San Antonio, Texas Coliseum, which is considered to be a white elephant that is largely vacant, has very few events, maybe one a month. And, you know, it's still has tremendous operating costs to air condition and secure the place and maintain it. And that's just one of many examples of that list of 41 or so Coliseums of more than 16,000 capacity. A lot of them are associated with universities or with sports teams. So, you know, they have basically a designed-in function and purpose, and are supported by those institutions, a sports team. Also, I wonder whether the cost estimate for this Richmond Coliseum project is really realistic. And I guess in looking at different ones, I would imagine it largely has to do with, you know, what you build it for. Is it going to be like a garage-like space with no amenities, or is it going to be a functional music hall? Or what the heck is it going to be? And the costs vary from well over $1 billion for the Barclay Center down to some that are in the range that the Richmond Coliseum is proposed for. Now, I could go through my list of Coliseum projects if you would like, or if you're interested, but you can look at Wikipedia also. But I really think it's incumbent for there to be an analysis of the existing Coliseum projects, that are, and particularly those that are publicly supported, and that the supporting economics should be looked at in detail. So again, please address the Slipic article and put that analysis in the minutes, if you would. And I thank the commission for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker, please, and Dodge Mick. Sir, if you want to provide us with that list of 41 entities, our email gets distributed to all the members, that would be
Well, I didn't actually print it out, but it's if you look at Wikipedia under, you just put in, or Google, Coliseums of capacity of greater than 16,000, you'll see that 41 come up on the list. So.
Good evening. My name is Stuart Schwartz. I'm on the policy chair for the Partnership for Smarter Growth. We're a nonprofit that's been working for about 17 years here in the city and region, addressing where and how we grow as a region. Earlier today, we submitted a letter to the city council and mayor registering our strong concerns about mainly the process side of things. We realize that you're responsible for, you know, a different type of analysis, but we did want you to know that letter has been submitted. We've sent you all a copy of that. You know, we want to be clear that we support the redevelopment of downtown. We've been strong backers of city revitalization, of the downtown master plan. We participated in all the other master plan processes and so forth. And we certainly think there is a lot to commend this project in terms of the mix of uses, the reconnection of the street grid, the restoration of the Blues Armory, and so forth. Sorry about that. But on the process side, you know, we were looking at things like the analysis of alternatives and whether we've adequately done that and so forth. Within your purview, though, you are doing great work as an all-volunteer commission, and we greatly appreciate that. Looking in, having finance experts, looking into the finance issues, I think looking into, I think you may touch on some of these questions, you know, Coliseum, yes or no? Is it needed to spark this type of revitalization, redevelopment? The TIF boundaries, the impact on school funding in the near term or in the middle to longer term, how the affordable housing is going to work, you know, when would we see that $10 million for the additional affordable housing and maybe farther out than we would want it to be, the income targeting for the affordable housing, the analysis there has been helpful as well. Other issues on substance include, what is the value of the property that we're transferring over? Should we have an updated assessment? And so forth. But when it comes to the alternative side of things, we were thinking about whether the city should have, from the very beginning, looked at alternative redevelopment strategies, which could be a small area plan that the public was engaged in, different financial scenarios, different approaches such as once you had the plan, selling off each parcel to the highest bidder in accordance with the plan, with clear statement that there are certain requirements for each parcel, such as if it's adjacent to a street connection you on Clay, for example, that you want to reestablish, have that part of, be part of that construction project and be the community benefit that we had achieved from that. But we can't, as the public, the council certainly can't do it without good financial and risk analysis that you all are going to contribute to. Hopefully this other consultant will contribute to. That said, though, because we didn't analyze alternatives upfront and have a process to consider the best approaches for downtown, we can't really know whether we're proceeding in the best way. We're also concerned, you know, in particular that there was only one bidder, and that usually indicates a problem, and that in our view, certain things happen in the negotiation afterward that an out-of-town bidder might not have been aware were possible, such as the expansion of the TIF district to 80 blocks of the city downtown, or the addition of, like, you know, the other parcels and so forth that we have in the project. We'll let the letter speak for itself that has all the other details, but again, we're going to depend on you all for the finance and detailed risk analysis. Thank you.
We did receive the statement today, and it is now part of the minutes that were sent out a little while ago to all of our members, and it is now available on the website.
Also, I think I'm old and getting hard of hearing. I know I'm old, but I think I'm getting hard of hearing. So when y'all speak, could you keep the microphone close to your mouth and be sure that at least I can hear you? Everybody else can probably hear you.
Who else wants to share some thoughts with us? Welcome, sir. And when you're done, if you can sign your name on the table, it would be great.
Good evening. My name is Art Burton, and I am representing an organization, Community Unity for Action in Richmond Hill, and our theme tonight is jobs and workforce. I worked with the last mayor on the Shaco Bottom proposal. It started out as a conversation about a museum and ended up as a conversation about economic development. The last mayor was kind of shocked because he went into it thinking one thing, came out understanding that what the community needed was economic development. That is what black people in the city were asking for, because as you know, in the city, the majority of those people who suffer from health and economic inequality are people of color. One of the things that conclusions we came to at the end of the Chaco Bottom debate was that we needed an expanded definition of black economic development, that you could not talk about black economic development simply as jobs and workforce, and that you had to have a series of things in place, starting with ownership, the developer. Did you have any black developers? Priming contractors, subcontractors, social enterprise, franchise business development, workforce training programs, and community benefit agreements. In the new paradigm that the social justice community uses in this city, any economic development proposal, not just Navy Hill, would be measured against all of those categories in terms of were minorities, were women participating in all of those areas. The structure of this deal gives all of the ownership to one group of people, and it really doesn't even allow us to see who all the other participants are, let alone operate in an intentional way to ensure that we are having the level of social impact that we need to address the issues of health and economic inequality in our community. For the last 6 months, my organization, I've met with ministers, I've met with African-American contractors, and the conclusion that I've come to is that the reality of it is we have no capacity right now to do anything more than what we are doing. Most of the contractors, most of everyone has said we are already operating at full capacity. And so even if we were to believe that all of what is being implied that this development is going to bring is true, the reality of it is we have no capacity at this moment in this city to do it, particularly if African-American people were going to participate in it. And by my estimate, we are at a minimum 18 to 24 months away if we were all operating in organizational unity and working together as the mayor proposes, one city, to get this done. And so that is why when we look at the proposal and everything is implied and on the back end of the deal, we understand it's on the back end of the deal because the reality of this deal is there's no capacity on the front end for African American people to participate in it. And so if we are sincere about our efforts to address health inequality, economic inequality, then we have to restructure this deal in a way that it gives more ownership to people of color and women, and it provides more capacity on the front end that allows us, nonprofits, grassroots organizations, service providers, workforce providers, to build their capacity in such a way that the thousands of people that the Navy Hill Corporation is representing would be able to accomplish that. So those are my concerns. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm going to make one quick comment that echoes what John Verner has said many times and what Mike Jewell just said. It's great. It's wonderful to hear what each of you says, but you will double the impact of your statement if you can take the time to send an email to John Verner that summarizes your comments. We read all the comments that are appended to our minutes, and every email that is sent to John Verner is read by all of us, and so we can take your words into account as we prepare our report.
Okay.
We'll have a profound impact if you take that opportunity.
I will, Matt. Thank you. All right.
Yes, sir. Pardon me, I'm going to mostly read from a phone, so if I'm not making eye contact, that's why. Good evening. My name is Ryan Darrow, and I wanted to speak with you all this evening about my concerns regarding the financial risk we are taking with this proposal. You have been tasked with assessing whether this project delivers on its claims in terms of addressing our city's challenges. On the issue of improving the economic position of our city, the project does not take Richmond forward. It appears to take us backwards. A number of red flags have presented themselves in terms of the numbers on this project, beginning with a TIF that expanded from 8 blocks to 80 in a very short period of time. As I understand it, for a project to, quote, pay for itself, as the mayor has claimed, it would need to generate enough revenue to pay back the money borrowed to build it. The fact that we need another 70 blocks of downtown development to pay off the bonds is concerning. To say that an investment in these 10 blocks will create incremental revenue is reasonable, but to say all development that will occur across 80 blocks of downtown for the next 30 years is attributable entirely to this project is sort of laughable. This is important because Richmond is a growing city. I think it's highly likely that without this project, we would still see plenty of development in these 80 blocks. And without this project, all of that would go to the city instead of bondholders. I understand that developers have argued that we would not see growth, but if they are so certain of that fact, I wonder why they insisted on a TIF by contract, which exempted them from having to actually run those numbers. Something that bothers me is that there are certain numbers here that you think would end the conversation. For example, Navy Hill is claiming this arena will generate $5.8 million a year, but the nine comparable arenas that Navy Hill itself identified make an average of $953,000 a year. The highest grossing venue earned $2.9 million. How does that not end the discussion? Numbers presented by the developers would assume that the average Coliseum attendee spends $458.48 on refreshments. Why are we continuing to use their projections in a discussion after learning that? And if the actual math of these numbers wasn't enough to question their validity, we could even just look at the historical precedent where projects like this have consistently costed more, taken longer to build, and generated less than predicted. Coliseums in particular have a disturbing track record of losing money and trapping localities into endless infusions of funding for updates because they are too big to fail. Economists are also overwhelmingly predicting we will be embarking on this dubious project right after or as we hit potentially a recession. I want to believe that the worst case scenario here is lower profits than anticipated for the city, leaving us still at a net positive. But that simply doesn't seem to be the case. I'm ready to stop hearing about non-recourse bonds because this deal is structured to ensure that we pay the interest first, the bondholders second, the insurance for the bondholders third, and then our crumbling schools and public services last. Sure, if the project generates $0, we don't have to pay the bonds back. But the more likely scenario is that the project will at least eke out the money for the bondholders and leave us bereft of money for the things that we actually need to invest in. We simply cannot take on this risk, and I urge you to communicate this in your recommendations to council. Thank you for your time.
Good evening. I'm also going to read from a statement. My name is Omari El Gaddafi, and I chair the Housing Committee for a social justice organization called Community Union in Action. It's an organization made up of several Black-led organizations doing work in housing, transportation, criminal justice reform, and other areas of advocacy. A large part of our work is about getting Black residents more involved in the creation and the implementation of solutions to the problems that affect the Black community in Richmond. But in the early 2000s, I was a software engineer, and I worked in application architecture, solving problems involving how various systems interact with each other. For the past 5 years, I've studied Richmond's issues of housing, transportation, job access, and economic mobility. And I can tell you with full confidence that the plan as presented to us does not bring us closer to solving problems of job access in Richmond. I do think it's a little disingenuous to tell residents of Richmond who will end up paying for this project that thousands of jobs will be available to them when we look at the fine print says that a lot of these jobs will be created in the surrounding counties. We have to realize that measuring job access is about more than just a job being located near you. You know, the transit planners that claim downtown is a major job center when they sold us this new transit plan to our city, they made this same claim. And the reason why the transit plan didn't help with jobs is because access is not just about location. It's also about qualifying to work those downtown banking jobs and the government jobs and the other jobs that are located there. There's an organization called the Citizens Budget Commission that studied tips all across the country, and they say, quote, that retail tips tend to shift spending and jobs within municipalities without producing a net gain in economic activity. And the next part is very important. Quote, this most often occurs for retail and entertainment projects for which there is a finite level of consumer demand within a region. Now, we haven't been told how many of these jobs would be hotel workers or restaurant workers or, you know, whatever else these jobs might be, part-time jobs, because in all honesty, the architects of this plan, they don't know. So what this means is that quite possibly, people would merely be laid off from other places downtown when people start using these new locations and stop using the existing ones. A wise man learns from their mistakes, but a wiser man learns from the mistakes of others. So although this project's planners, they highlighted Kansas City as a successful similar project, they failed to mention the vacant buildings that were left all over Kansas City for years with no employees. They failed to mention how the anchor developer handed the project to other developers, and those other developers cannot legally be required to uphold their promises for minority business inclusion. When we look at that Kansas City project, the executive director of Good Jobs First says, the savviest economic development professionals look more holistically at placemaking. It takes schools, parks, transportation, housing, and amenities to provide a meaningful economic boost. He goes on to say that had the incentive package paid more attention to those issues and not just jobs, it could have helped the surrounding community capture more workers and businesses. Now, I would ask my other fellow advocates on the other side of the aisle to take these things into consideration. We see that there's been names of, you know, businesses like, you know, for example, Better Housing Coalition that has actually been named inside of the plan. And we would ask that let's get these minority businesses and these other service providers who would also be claimed to be implied to be a part of this development, can we get those also in writing? You know, if it's not in writing, we know that the ambiguity is going to work against us. And that's what I would ask for you guys and for my fellow advocates that are on the other side of the aisle that only want the best for our city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, if you would take the time to email your thoughts to us, would be great. Appreciate that very much. Yes, sir.
This report. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. But I was concerned. The younger gentleman asked that earlier. His hearing wasn't that well. So I'm glad to see this is being recorded. All of my concerns that this will be before we can have each sit on the floor, as important as these issues are to people. So I accidentally found out about this meeting today. So how is it that I'm thinking possibly we can aren't more people here because they didn't know about it, but I definitely know about it. I've dealt with this city for the longest time. Now, I'm a Muslim and I'm black. And I'm concerned with the time of man. Now, the lure of what I've heard so far is, especially to minorities, is job, job, job. I want to hear something about preparing people to be on, pursue their potential, their passion, whatever that is, hopefully it's something positive. And help them become professional successful business people, entrepreneurs. That's very important, see, because to a great degree, it has nothing to do with you all necessarily, but this climate has encouraged us to be consumers and laborers, not pursuers of jobs, of opportunity. So I'm concerned with that. So I would hope that if this development, personally, I don't know enough about Naked Hill development or project to say yes or no. But the little I've heard about it, I'm impressed with. But not enough to the point that you know, I can take a solid position with this. So one of the earlier speakers said, keep in mind, the young man said, keep in mind, this should be for the best of all of men that's in this area. So I'm saying this to myself first, be mindful of the decision that we make and the impact it may have on people, positive or negative.
Thank you very much. Anybody else want to address the commission? We're all ears. Come on down.
Grace Washington, JD Workforce Development. I just wanted to add to the official minutes. Tonight I'm here representing the Central Virginia Business and Contractors Association, which is in support of this project. And you will have a list of names, as well as we have already submitted 51 names with another 60 coming from the Metropolitan Business League. And part of what we have been doing in preparation for this project is talking to the businesses that may be able to connect and identifying the impediments that would prevent them from normally being a part of a project like that, like this. We have been aggressively working on that. The other thing, as far as the workforce, and I agree with my community activists and our partner, because we all work for the same purpose and the same cause, even though we may go about it differently. But it takes a lot of money to prepare our people who are not prepared to go to work now. It takes a bold and a big project. Because if there was money already available to do that, we would have done it. We know the city cannot provide it on its own. The state cannot provide it. It probably will have to come from the private sector. But they also want to have a return because they're not in the business of social development. We think that this project is a combination of both social and private and public. And therefore, I continue, and the organizations I work with continue to be in support of the project. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Washington, could you sign up so we have... Welcome, Miss.
Good afternoon. I am a resident of Richmond. I've been a resident for 11 years. My name is Sarah, and I am coming to say that I am agreeing with this project because I think we all need a change in life. We all need to just step up for 2020 because you never know what God has planned for us. So many people have gone away from here, you know, back to back. Who knows that we're going to be here tomorrow to see what's going to go on with this world. And we have voted in different presidencies, and we have gave them chances. So why don't we give you all a chance? And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Come on down. How many others are intending to speak tonight, just so we get a sense? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe about 6 people. Okay, great. Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Yes, good evening, everyone. My name is James J.J. Minor. I'm a community activist, a real advocate, and I'm also the president of the Richmond, Virginia branch, NAACP, where our mission is to ensure the political, social, educational, and economic equality rights of all persons, and to eliminate race-based discrimination. You will be receiving a letter from us, and also council will be receiving a letter from us, because we took a position because this project falls in line with our mission. People, we live in an eternal, slow, moving city. We're not proactive enough. We need economic development. We are almost at a population of 230,000 people. Guess what? We have one Walmart, one Target, and two Wawa gas stations in the city of Richmond. That's it. And one mall. And nobody how that goes to. One Walmart, one Target, and two Wawa gas stations, and one mall that a lot of folks can't even get to. We need this development. We need entertainment. We need retail. We need restaurants. It looks like a wasteland down there. When will be the next time that someone, a developer or anyone will come and give us, this is like a gift. The jobs, 20,000 jobs, 9,000 permanent. We need a funding for education. Where else are we going to get a revenue? We don't have it. We have got to stop. Listen, we got to look. We need to do more of a proactive city, y'all. We've got to be more proactive. But again, Richmond is a cradle of the nation. We're the cradle of the nation. So we need to do something to start rocking the cradle, because we are behind. The thing about it is, we are still, stuck in the 20th century, and our colleges are in the 21st century. That's a shame. And we're the capital of Virginia. The naysayers, they don't have a plan. They don't have a plan. And I love them, because some of them are some of my best friends. You know, you're going to have some folks for and opposed, but they don't have a plan to bring in more revenue for the city. So please, I'm asking you all to just think about what you're doing and how you decide. Because Richmond needs this project. This is all we have left, y'all. We have this, the boulevard, and you may have something, you can do something with jet lakes. That's it. We're landlocked. Stop thinking outside the box. Please let me make a recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, if you would follow up with email to the Navy Hill Commission site, that would be very helpful. Yes, sir. Welcome.
Greetings, everyone. Initial last couple of meetings. I'm actually happy to follow the brother from the NAACP. I have some very big concerns around the rain manager for this project, Spectra. They had a lawsuit in 2014 where HR manager notified their head HR manager that one of the hiring managers said that they did not want to hire any more black people. Spectra fired the whistleblower and promoted the person who had 11 counts of sexual harassment against him and racial discrimination. And in the lawsuit, Judith Gail Taylor versus Comcast Spectra Board Global Spectrum, who they used to be called, actually found that Spectra maintained, condoned, and promoted a culture and environment of racial discrimination. Now, when John Cade was in town and he was asked by this Lieutenant Gray, he tried to distance himself. He first confirmed that the head HR director who fired the whistleblower, Karen Kiola, still is their head HR director. That is a serious problem for me. Not only that, they are owned by Comcast, and when he was questioned about that, he said that Comcast is only a slight owner, which unfortunately is not correct. During the Time Warner merger, Comcast created their parent company, Atairos, and the CFO, a lawyer that brokered the deal, also with $4 million from Comcast, and they actually have a partnership that Comcast is the sole investor of this company for 10 years. So they are challenging this, and this is the environment that we are trusting to hire and provide labor contracts and actual opportunities to these communities here. Also, a lot of my concerns, again, with the lack of a CBA, lack of a CLA, things that organizers such as Bill, Baltimore's United in Leadership Development, actually won in a similar TIF project in Baltimore, has not been a part of this process. Meaning that, and there's a study by Good Jobs First that's called the 10 cities that actually measure. What does that mean? Is that two?
That's 3 minutes.
2 minutes? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was like 3 seconds. At least like two.
Good try.
Okay, I will. But I'll send all of this to you. As you guys know, I send emails. But the 10 cities study pretty much shows that when a new corporation or business or development actually shows up to a town, and tax subsidies don't actually incentivize people to hire people from that community, and typically the people that are transient can actually just move to where the new place is and get those jobs. I have evidence of that. When I first moved to Virginia 12 years ago, I moved to Chesterfield. I worked in Chesterfield. Then I moved to Henrico, and I lived in Henrico, and I moved in Richmond, and I worked in Richmond. So because I had access to transportation and other things like that, the research actually shows that people with better access to transportation actually ends up getting these jobs. And so that's why Louisville, Kentucky did something called a Tiffany Bay program that actually said that if they had hired people from a certain low wage threshold in order to get that back. But it's hard for them to do that. But anyways, I have serious concerns around how we actually target this to make this for the people who come up and speak up and want this change for their communities. I'm very concerned given the civil rights history. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Other speakers?
Hello, good evening. My name is Quinn Robbins. Some of y'all might be familiar with me. I've submitted some public comments before, specifically about the financial risk that this project does in fact pose to the city. I think it's a serious issue. I just wanted to kind of summarize some thoughts. And I think general conversations that I've been having on this commission, just to remind everyone kind of like the magnitude, order of magnitude of the project that we're dealing with. This is the largest TIF zone that has been proposed, I think, ever, potentially just in Virginia, regardless, is a serious matter. I think that there is a conversation that happens around this deal when we start talking about risk, right? I think most of the conversation around risk centers at the idea that these bonds are non-recourse, and I think that is used as sort of a talking point to say to the public and to say to us that we're not actually bearing any burden in this project. I think on this commission, some of that sort of myth, as I see it, has been busted. But I want to make sure that we're clear that there are parallel conversations about risks that are happening, right? There's the risk to the investor, and then there's the risk to the public. And I think the risk to the investor is kind of what's focused on. We're told that the investor is bearing all the risk, and I find that to be kind of untrue. If you look at meeting cap documents, for example, the debt service coverage ratio that you're told is required in order to make this project successful is at minimum 150% and goes all the way up to 200%. So I don't see a lot of risk for the investors. I think even in scenarios of economic downturn, general fund shortage, maybe devaluation in property assessments, it seems to me that these bonds are a really good deal, but not for us. On the other side of that, I think that there are substantial risks to the public, not only from the loss of general fund revenue. I think primarily there is the issue of the property transfers, where we're transferring property prime downtown real estate for about $15 million. By my analysis, that the land value assessment alone, so this isn't market value, this is an improvement value of around $28 million, just looking at other similar transfers in the area. So there's sort of a floor of about double for this. So we're risking prime real estate in the downtown area. Speaking of alternatives, you know, this is land that could be sold, generate revenue. One-time revenue obviously isn't ideal, but like regardless, we're still risking this property on the project and kind of giving it away, heavily subsidized. And I think something that I talked about earlier is, you know, kind of the risk to the public in the case of a financial downturn. We built into the mechanism of financing, there's a stabilization fund for the investor, so that if there is any, you know, instability, as it's called, any period, they're able to be paid out essentially in full. And that fund refills itself in any subsequent period, there's a surplus, right? But there's no stability fund for the public, right? If this bond proves to, you know, go below that 47% threshold, we're on the hook for that deal if the investor can pay first. That seems to me to be deeply unfair. I think the turbo that was talked about as us paying our mortgage. Well, in conclusion, I think that there are substantial risks to the public. I think the investor essentially pays none. I think the city, this project is going to take the city backwards and not forwards. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, if you would share your thoughts on email, those do get read by the commission members. Who else would like to speak? Welcome.
Hi there. My name is Gray. I live down the street. I wanted to. I'm a historian by training, and I wanted to mention to this commission that I think it would be useful to consider Richmond's history. In the past, we have embarked on similar projects. We built the Bonson Horse Redskins Field, which is a gorgeous facility that is locked. The gates are locked. Most people cannot get in there, and our kids can't use those fields. It costs $5,000 a day to rent those fields, and the rich lacrosse leagues from the West End, they have access to that facility that our dollars paid for, that doesn't make money. Humphrey Calder and Abner Clay, where our kids do have access, those fields are bare dirt. There's no grass there, there's broken glass, there's broken equipment. That's where our kids get to go, not the beautiful facilities that we pay for. The Coliseum Lagoons argue we're still paying debt service on a Coliseum that is shuttered. We're still paying that debt service. We're still paying for the Blues Army that failed before. And why is it going to be different now? We've had sports teams in Richmond before, third-rate hockey franchises, and they have failed. Arena football failed. These teams have failed. And frankly, because nobody wants to go spend $60 on cheap tickets and leave beer. Like, we don't want to do it. Where we do have communities, we had a community in Amy Hill in the early 20th century. We had a community in Jackson Ward in the early 20th century. We had thriving communities, and yet we destroyed those communities to build big infrastructure for people that have passed through this city, that don't stay here and don't live here. Those neighborhoods are gone now, and we propose to put something in the middle of them to divide them further. Our communities come together in our parks where everyone has access, in our neighborhoods where everyone can afford to buy a home, or at least afford to live in a decent home. Our communities come together in events like the Richmond 10K, where we can cheer on your neighbors, we can all cross the finish line together. These are events that everyone can take part in. Parks are places where people have access. Everyone can be a part of that. This is yet another example of something that is built for people that don't live here, that people have to pay for access to. And that's just not fair to all Richmonders. All Richmonders deserve places they have access to, like good schools, affordable housing, jobs, and parks. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Who else would like to speak up? We're all ears. Yes, sir, come on down.
Hi,
Welcome.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Last time I spoke, my name is Charles Swartz, by the way. Actually, I grew up right in this field, right here, Boston Elementary School. So this home, also I worked in this field. It wasn't the only Acadian, although I'm very proud of the Acadian. But I'm even more proud of this area where we are now, because I grew up as a little boy, 2 years old, right across the street, 915 Moses Street. I've seen a lot of things, I've seen a lot of places. And one time when I was a little boy, to look out of the front doors of 915 Moses Street and to look across the valley, which we never got a chance to cross the bridge, it was actually a valley. Well, I guess it's a wooden bridge. When I saw the tall buildings over across town, to me that was New York City, because my vision of New York City as a little boy growing up in the private housing area was that it was tall buildings. That's all we knew. There's a church that sits right up on the hill, right here, corner of Paramount and Mosby, and that's what I call Church Hill, because that was a church on the hill. That was the vision that a lot of my friends and neighbors had in this area that we reside in, where we're here today, that we saw that. And we never thought that there would be an opportunity to see the vision of what the Navy Hill is bringing forward today. The fact that we can see the experience of the arena going forward and not the old Coliseum. The fact that we can see conventions going forward. The fact that we can see mega hotels going forward, like other cities. And one of the things that, as I grew up, that really bothered me was that when I got a lot to learn about racial and economics and how finances are generated, taxes and all that kind of stuff, I experienced the sports and the NCAA and all of that happened here in Richmond, and then all of a sudden it disappeared. And I started asking, where did it go to? What happened? And found out that it went down to Charlotte, North Carolina. And they took what we were talking about developing today. They took all of that, and they took the revenues, and they took all the sports and all the concerts, and they took everything from Richmond and sent it down into North Carolina, believing that it would come back to Richmond and go to other cities. But it has never came back. The reason why it never came back is because we don't have adequate facilities here to entertain the mass of people that are coming. We don't have the hotels, and we don't have the shopping malls, and all of that stuff that when you have visitors, the first place they go is to the downtown of the city. And we are near that downtown part of the city. So I want to share with the commission, and even those that are similar today, that it's very important that, as one of us, a little boy, and now being a bald-headed young man, that I still have that vision that we can achieve, that we can meet that goal. We can do that. We need our money back in Richmond. And I remember one, I end with this, I remember at one of the meetings, someone got up and said over in the south side, deep south side, they said, well, why can't we share this with Michael? Why didn't we call Chesterfield? Why didn't we call Hanover and Hopewell? Well, God bless the child that got his own. That's 4 seconds or 4 minutes. I just kidding. God bless the child that got his own. This is Richmond, and we need our own. Downtown is dangerous. We need the physicians, you physicians, to pump that life back into downtown. And we want to, I look forward to seeing you all taking a positive vote, an elected vote back to the city council saying we think that this is a great opportunity for Richmond, and we would like to move forward on this opportunity. It's approved in the year of development. Thank you, God bless you.
Thank you. Who else wants to speak? Any other speakers? All right, we're going to call the, did you want to speak, sir? Okay. We're going to call the public hearing to a close. We want to thank everyone for coming out. Let me go down and get a microphone. We're just going to take a couple minutes.
You need?
Yes, sir.
We only have one.
Thank you. Since we have limited membership and this is the first of four public hearings this week, I think we want to minimize the impact on everybody. I did want to say to folks in terms of anything else we do tonight. Are there any questions that members of the commissions have or anything that John or I can be providing for you all?
So I just want to understand our process of going forward with preparing the report. I know we all have the assignment, which we appreciate, of submitting our comments. And then, what was the plan then?
So my aspiration is to have a draft ready for our folks to look at Friday, maybe early Saturday. I do think we are going to need an extra meeting to approve that. One of the things I wanted to canvass is availability this weekend or Monday. I do know that Sunday is a possible date. I'm afraid I might need Saturday for just editing and getting stuff together until I get it back together. So if I could, and I'll send out an email to everybody with a couple of days of availability, but the 23rd is our due date, which is Monday, so I'm hopeful.
Can you provide marital counseling as part of our...
And I don't need marital counseling. I need someone who can finish my Christmas shop.
All well and good. So,
I'll get the money, I just need the money to go.
All right, we'll take care of that. So for folks in the audience, each member of the commission has received essentially a worksheet, and those are coming back and will be compiled into a draft that identifies the commission's views with respect to assumptions, projections, costs, benefits, and then some larger questions as to the impact of both the ordinance and the project itself. And those latter two questions are a little more open-ended. We have also committed as a group to say what could be done to improve the ordinance, what could be done to improve the project, and what could be done to improve the process. That's where we are. We have a lot of work to do because we spent a lot of time listening. We have three more public hearings. Tomorrow night we are 6 p.m. at Carver, and I anticipate, again, probably a similar turnout there. The deadline for the worksheets is noon tomorrow, Tuesday, so hopefully everyone can come close to that. If not, just give me a shout and we'll find ways to work out. But until we get comments back from each individual, it's going to be tough to start finalizing the report. Any other questions? Okay, the meeting.
Request some information.
I'm sorry.
We requested additional information. Have we got anything in on the day one benefits or anything like that yet? Did I miss that?
We got confirmation that they received those questions and they're being processed.
Mr. Sledge, can we represent? We know that you're aggressively working.
Yes, we wrapped up our responses to those today. I had my board meeting today, so we'll get those out.
Okay, so we'll see those tomorrow. Thank you so much. Okay, anything else? If not, the meeting is adjourned. And thank you, everyone.